out in Redfink. Redfink! It's all the time I'm out in the Redfinks. Go where and go, Redfinks. Fuzzfink. Rotten Redfink. All the time I go everywhere, rotten Redfinks. It's rotten world. World is all rotten. Everything about the world is rotten Redfinks. Everywhere I go is a Redfink. The good man got no chance. The Redfinks everywhere. Redfink, always. Redfinks everywhere. Redfinks, Redfinks. That's very good, very good. He always sinks. Swinky music to the kettle as he swings. Back and forward in the saddle and the horse. Then his syncopated gaited. And there's such a funny meter to the roar of his rookie to how they run. Oh, Redfinks. When they hit it for his gun, breaks the western folks all know. He's a highfalutin' shooting son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy. Oh, what a cowboy. Ragtime cowboy, Joe. Oh, rink-a-tink-tink. Rink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. Funny guy, stars are wise guys. Now, come on, all of my friends sing here. He always sinks. Will you set it back at the beginning there? Set it back at the beginning, I said. Do not take it off. Put it in the fret, Fink. No time. It's all right, Walt. You're okay. Can you hear me, Walt, in there? Oh, speak up. Oh, it's picking up. Working up. Breaking up. Oh, well, what's the matter? A cheap mic? Oh, lightning at the transmitter. Aha! Retribution. I knew our sins would come back to visit us. I understand lightning is hitting the transmitter out there in Carteret. Boom! Oh, wait. Hey, that was a very good one. Let's try that once again, Walt, right from the beginning now, all together. Now, I will give you first the prelude. Out in Arizona, where the bed men are, the only thing to guide you is a evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far is Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He always sinks, swinging music to the kettle as he swings, back and forward in the saddle and a horse that is syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeat, how they run when they hit a fella's gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin shooting son of a gun from Arizona. I cut it out there. Rick thinks, you know, speaking of, it's after all, it's raining, it's Thursday night. I mean, what do you, the funny bit, speaking of Thursday night, if you can prepare something really spooky, speaking of the spooky things, tonight, are you aware that an archaeologist will often tell you that one of the greatest finds for an archaeologist is to find a toy of a lost civilization? Oh, yes, really. Because a toy often tells a lot more than, say, if you find the soap dish. You know? Are you aware that some of these guys have sent millions of people over to dig, and they dig 400 feet down the ground in this very special place, and they come up with 6,000 laundry lists, all done in Etruscan? That's true. They had laundry then. You know, you'd never guess it. They got milkman notes. Do you know what actually is on the Rosetta Stone? You heard about the Rosetta Stone? How they made the big thing when they finally deciphered it? Do you know what is on the Rosetta Stone? If I told you, I'd be off the air. It's incredible. It's incredible. Just an awful thing. When you stop to realize that kind of stuff is universal. I mean, you hate to think that people living in classical periods were thinking the same rotten thoughts as that crowd in the subway. Crying out loud. You know, speaking of rotten thoughts, it's true that the archaeologists are always looking for toys. And they dig up a toy, and they know what everybody's bugged by, or what people dig, or a lot of things about the civilization. Now, here, I'll give you an example. Today, I'm going through Woolworths, right there on Times Square. Now, they have a big toy department. Okay? What a treasure trove for the archaeologist. Someday, when he's digging, he's going to come across this. They have a counter, a complete counter, filled with these little boxes. Now, I go over and look at the boxes, and they're kind of big boxes, actually. And there it is. It's a battery-operated crap shooter. You can now get, for your little tyke, a battery-operated crap shooter that has a special vinyl face that chews gum. All together, gang. Yes, you can now. It's battery-operated transistor. All together. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue. And that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks. And that's my weakness now. Oh, by the way, look a tick a tick a tick. Oh, my, oh, gee, oh, gee, oh, gee. All right, cut it out now. That's enough. See, these things are just put in here to remind you of your own mortality. Now, don't put that away, Walt. Just keep that, because we're going to need that. People keep forgetting their mortality, and once in a while we have to remind them of that. And somehow, I do believe, seriously now, if a guy 1,000 years from now is digging, a guy 1,000 years from now, almost fell into Jimmy Cagney there. It's funny. I'll do my famous Jimmy Stewart imitation here in a minute. Would you like to hear that? Or would you prefer my famous Henry Fonda imitation? As a matter of fact, Henry Fonda imitates me, you know. He does. Where do you think he got all those, that the way he talks and all that? That's true. Rat Fink. He makes it look at me, sitting here on this rotten radio station all night long. Rotten, rotten. You think it's fun? Rick, think we're all together now? All together. All together. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue. And that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks. And that's my weakness now. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, rick-a-dick-a-ding. Rick-a-dick-a-ding. All right, that's enough now. They've been reminded. Really singing tonight. You notice that? Yeah, he's singing there. Now I would like to lay before you the thesis that if some clown digging 1,000 feet below the surface, right there where the Woolworths used to be, in the year 4278, trying to figure out what it was really like, and he comes across a little battery-operated crapshooter with a vinyl face that chews gum, he will know a deuced more about our civilization than, say, if he were to dig up the entire files of the year 1923 through 1978 of the New York Times. Come on, let's go. All together, gang. Oh, I like this tune. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue, and that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks, and that's my weakness now. Oh, gee, oh. All right, smart guy, you sing it better. All right, you sing it better. You sing it better, sing it. Don't come around me, Rat Fink. Terrible, have you noticed how terrible I am? I'm a very terrible person tonight. What's the matter with me? What is it? Is it the moon or something, Walter? What do you think it is? Ordinarily, I'm a very nice person. Battery-operated crap shooter. A little vinyl face chews gum. And what's worse, the little son of a gun probably has loaded dice, which would really talk about our civilization. I mean, not the Americans, just the world, you know, the little guy, come on, fade me. Yeah, just a little vinyl face chewing gum. Well, I thought right away there that perhaps
more was there than met the eye. As a matter of fact, you know, you begin to have... Did I ever tell you about the time, speaking of car, of toys? I was given a toy once, which it goes back into the very dim recesses of my memory. It's very peculiar, because when I looked at that little crapshooter there and his little vinyl face chewing gum, you don't even have to wind him up anymore. That's what's so good about it. You know, they have battery-operated. There's nothing like a transistor, a very, very fine transistor-operated gum chewer, Walt. I think that kind of adds up there very well. All of our scientific, somehow that kind of makes it all add up, doesn't it, Walt? 10,000 years of electrical research, you go through Steinmetz, Hertz, you go through Kirchhoff, it goes all the way back to Benjamin Franklin, it goes even back further than that to the original Greeks that were experimenting with electricity. Guys were rubbing little plastic balls together, you know, and trying to get magnetism and static electricity. You remember all that stuff on it? They did all that stuff. And then it goes all the way up through Thomas Edison, Steinmetz, Western Electric, General Electric, Betty Furness, all the famous people who know all about electricity. Finally, what do? They wind up with this tremendous transistor and this battery, and they hook it all up, and it turns out to be a little guy with a vinyl face chewing gum and shooting crap. They're crying out loud. Oh, my God. She's got eyes of blue. I never care for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue. And that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks. And that's my weakness now. Oh, my. Oh. Any of you guys out there got a band that you'd like a rotten band singer with? I can do very good stuff with Red Sails in the Sunset. Oh, yeah. You know, the kind where you break up your voice fixes. Speaking of rotten bands, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. Got it? All right, all together now. All together, I want you all to repeat it out there. Raise your right hand, repeat it. Put your left hand over your heart. Look up at that great arching firmament of the sky and say, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. Yes, WOR, AM and FM, New York. And I want you to swear allegiance. Okay? Believe me, this is the only station on the band, you know, that puts it squarely up to you. Are you with us? You're either with us or you're against us, you know. I'm not fooling around. I want you to stand up and be counted. Are you with us? Put your hand up in the air there. Look up there and say, yes, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York, and I'm with you, Shep. Firm marching. All right, now I want you all to sing our theme song now, together now. All together now. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue, and that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks, and that's my weakness now. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, gee. Oh, gee, oh, gee.
Oh, it should be good.
Rack-a-dick-a-dick. Rack-a-dick-a-dick-a-dick.
She loves to bill and coo. I never liked to bill and coo, but she likes to bill and coo. So that's my weakness now.
All right, now, there. Now, do you feel better? You've sworn allegiance to something, anyway. Speaking of swearing allegiance, I'm going to have to do something to flip the limelight habit. This is getting terrible. Last night, 4 o'clock in the morning, the night before that, 3 o'clock in the morning, the night before that, all night, I stayed there till noon. Better part of my youth has been spent sitting around drinking double espressos, swearing and spitting on the floor. That's no way to write the great American novel or even learn how to tap dance, for that matter. I'm telling you the truth. If you are looking for a place where you can waste your time creatively, I mean, and really feel angry about it as though somehow you're writing that great chapter of your novel just by being there, I would suggest the Limelight, the truth. And it's down at 91 7th Avenue South. I think it's down there right in the heart of Sheridan Square, and it's called the Limelight. And they have the greatest one. I'll tell you, they have one of the greatest hamburgers in town, seriously. A couple of big, stiff double espressos. Hamburger there, and spit and holler. Look, watch the guys play the banjo, yell, and swing from the chandeliers. It's the Limelight, and they're open Sunday, and you'll misspend your youth. They have food, and they have little drinkies there, and the whole business. And I've been going in the limelight now for over 45 years. All the way back, it was late 1958. A limelight, 7th Avenue South, 91. Okay? Make the scene. The thing about them is they're open till about 3 o'clock in the morning. So after the show, go, man. It's not one of those places that closes up. They're open 7 days a week. Limelight. Oh, well, we also have here Random House. You got it? Random House? Random! Random! Yeah, let's play the thing.
What is it?
What is it?
A book.
Hey, Pfeiffer, it was a great idea for a great satirical sketch called Mary Worth Meets Jules Pfeiffer. Or Beetle Bailey Strikes Back. Oh, that's Hold Me by Jules Pfeiffer, published by Random House. Random is now on sale at your favorite. Oh, they've scratched it out. So you just go to your favorite. Just $1.95. You can pick whatever it is that's favorite with you. There's a lot of $1.95 there. Oh, boy. Everything's getting worse. Some night I'll tell you the story of Heine Faupel's revenge. Speaking of revenge, I've never mentioned Heine Faupel, who lived in the neighborhood. And I'll never forget Heine Faupel got his revenge. You see, I'll tell you what Heine Faupel was bugged about. Was because everybody was teed off about the way Heine Faupel wore his hair. Heine Faupel was the first guy in the entire Midwest who had a crew haircut. And they used to call it a crowd haircut. Yeah. And Heine Faupel, what made it even worse was Heine was a crowd. So, you know, it kind of bugged him, you know. You kind of, crowd haircut! And Heine's walking down the street, and Heine is a crowd, you know. He had a lot of trouble there with that. And Heine had a head that was shaped exactly like a Brunswick bulky collared and number 17B bowling ball. That's the ladies' model, the three-fingered model there. Heine had a bowling ball that he was carrying around in his shoulders with just this little fuzz on the top. And somehow it infuriated everybody. What is it about the way people wear their hair that gets everybody bugged? I'll tell you this. It doesn't make any difference. I go on a television show. I can do everything. I can win the Nobel Prize, go on and play the violin, play tap dance, head thump, tell funny jokes, play Hamlet, and I'll get 45 letters say, Shepard, why you wear your hair like that? What is this? I'm serious about that. I like it that way. Isn't that enough? I like it. Rat thinks. Letter out is I do this television show in Philadelphia, and every week I get a knee deep in letters, people complaining about the way my hair is. I don't complain about your hair, and look at it. Look at it. I'm serious. Look at it. Don't push me around. Look at your knees. Look at the foot. Rotten thing. I'll tell you about Heine Faupel, the time he got his revenge. Heine Faupel, anyone want to hear about Heine Faupel's revenge? Well, you don't? Okay, good. I won't tell you then. Just as well, because Faupel... No, Eddie's the master race in there. He takes it over. No? See? He doesn't want to hear about Heine Faupel's revenge. Well, all right, you want to hear... Shall I tell you the story about the time that we named the street? Would you like to hear that story? Good. All right. Somehow, too bad we've lost Heine Faupel. I'll tell you what Heine did, though. The thing about Heine Faupel, he was always writing an Irish Mail. Interesting. Hands across the sea thing, you know. Well, yes, you know, Heine was a little... Well, Heine. We used to call him Heine. Heine Faupel. And Heine would ride on the Irish Mail. An Irish Mail? You don't know what is it, an Irish Mail? An Irish Mail. Well, I can't express it any more than this. It's an Irish Mail. It's a thing you sit on, you go, push back and forth, and it goes. Yeah, Heine used to ride around the neighborhood in an Irish Mail. Everybody else had bicycles. Heine Faupel had an Irish Mail. It was a pretty rotten situation, actually. Now that I think about it, you know. I don't see what I'm laughing about Heine Faupel for. And his mother made cottage cheese pie, which made everybody even more, you know. His mother used to make out on the back porch. I remember the whole neighborhood used to be stinking from it. She used to, on the back porch, she had a gigantic crock of homemade sauerkraut. And let me tell you, this sauerkraut had fuzz on it. It was the wildest sauerkraut. It was about 190 proof. And she had a big, giant crock. And on top of this giant crock, she had a big wooden tub-like top. And on top of that was a thing called a kraut stone. A kraut stone. What? Don't you know anything? What is it? What kind of an American are you? Kraut stone. And Heine Faupel's father, who It's funny. He worked at the Roundhouse, and he made everybody mad because he really worked at the Roundhouse. You see, and Bruner always would go down to the Roundhouse. Bruner was on the extra board for over 40 years, and Mr. Foppel was on the regular board. And it was all felt that Mr. Foppel was keeping Mr. Bruner off the regular board. And Mr. Foppel is where I learned my terrible, rotten Bavarian German accent, because you could not talk to Mr. Foppel unless you talked in a terrible accent. He could not understand regular talk. So he would say, "Hey, is Heini there?" And he would say, "Yeah, yeah, Heini is here, yeah." And then it was okay. If you went up and said, "Is Heini here?" He'd say, "What is?" And you'd say, "Is Heini here? What do you say there?" And I'd say, "Is Heini here, huh? Is Heini in here, huh? Huh?" And he would say, "Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 boy, Heini is in the house." And it was all right. So I learned a lot of things in the neighborhood. So Heini Foppel, you don't want to hear any more about Heini and the sauerkraut, do you? Well, in the summertime, you see, Mrs. Foppel, Katharina Foppel, Mrs. Foppel, and I remember his father used to stand on the front porch, and he wouldn't holler through the house. He would holler around the house. And when his mother was always on the back porch. They had a summer kitchen. You know what is it, a summer kitchen? What is this? What kind of an American is in a summer kitchen? So Mr. Foppel would holler around the whole house and, "Hey, Katie, where is you, Katie? Hey, Katie, where is Heini?" And you would hear in the back there, Heini is at the stove. Well, it was a kind of a life. But one of the things that must be reported about, I don't think I've ever told this. Why haven't I told about Heini Foppel and the sauerkraut? Well, Mrs. Foppel would take sauerkraut, make sauerkraut, actually. They didn't, and she would get cabbages. Well, what you do when you're making sauerkraut, apparently, I don't know any more about it than this, you get old cabbages. They're very old, angry cabbages. Now, these are very big cabbages, and you know, when a cabbage gets old, it gets very crotchety. It gets bad knees and things, and gets bad teeth, and gets in a very, very terrible state, and gets very, very angry. They're awful temper. And she would get about 4 bushel baskets of terrible, old, rotten, angry, senile cabbages, and would cut them all up and put them in this crock with a lot of stuff. Well, I'll tell you, let me tell you, within 2 weeks, the neighborhood, the paint would be peeling off the walls of the houses with sauerkraut. And it was a fantastic thing. You know, it did 2 things. Either it made you incredibly hungry all the time, or it made you so you threw up into the radiators always. It's down there all the time. People, it depended, it was all depending on how you were. It was just insane. And people were always getting up petitions about the sauerkraut. They called it the sauerkraut petition. Well, it so happened my mother liked the sauerkraut. And Mrs. Anderson would come around with the sauerkraut petition that she was always taking over to Mrs. Foppel. I have 45 neighborhoods. They have, Mrs. Anderson was a Swede. As I told you, she was a lamp. And they apparently don't eat sauerkraut. However, they eat other things like dead fish. Now, when Mrs. Anderson was burying the fish out in the backyard, oh, yes, yes, the Swedes eat dead fish that are very dead. They get these little fish somewhere. I don't know where they get them. They don't come out of the lake. And maybe, I don't know, they pick them up on the beach or something, but they're very old dead fish. They're worse than the cabbages. But somehow this did not seem to affect Mrs. Anderson except to make her hungry. And so she would bury the old fish out in the backyard. Oh, yes, what they do is bury the fish in the backyard under what used to be called, and it still is, I guess, out in the suburb, a compost heap. Now, there are several kinds of compost heaps. There's, yes, I'm telling you the truth. There is a, now, you think I'm inventing it? Now, there is a kind of compost heap that is made out of old leaves and stuff, and then there's the kind of compost heap that's made out of something else, and I know that there are kids with us, and that was the kind Mrs. Anderson would use. Well, she would dig a big hole in the backyard with the dead fish, and put the dead fish in, and she would pile the compost heap, and I'll tell you, it would start to cook within 5 minutes with the fish and everything else going on there, it would cook. Well, Mrs. Anderson loved this, and of course, Mr. Anderson, who was always bagged anyway, loved anything that they gave him. He'd eat anything, you know. Yeah, he was just hollering and yelling. He'd eat privet hedges, anything that you'd hand him. So Mr. Anderson thought it was fine, and Dorothy Anderson, who was a knothead from the first order, thought everything was great, too. She was purely a Pollyanna, you know, but the neighborhood did not quite count into the fish. Well, Mrs. Anderson, the ironical part of it was she was the one that was instigating continually the sauerkraut petition. And she would walk around like a tall specter right out of Elsinore Castle. Very tall, angry lady carrying this long petition. And when a lap is putting a petition in your lap, let me tell you, you sign. And she would stand and look at you with big, cold blue eyes and black hair with a sauerkraut petition. And she would say, there is nothing worse than sauerkraut, especially when it's on a hot day. Well, all the while, here you could just see that the windows were warping from the fish. I don't know what they call it. Is there any Swede out there? Now, you think I'm inventing it? Is there any Swede? What do they call those dead fish? It's some kind of a... What do they call it? I'll tell you, these fish, are they get to be so that they're kind of liquid. And they spread it on anise bread. Yeah, oh yeah, they have a special kind of beer that has old cigars in it. And they drink the cigars and the beer and all of it all at once. It's just a wild thing about those people, yes. Now, don't get sick. I'm telling you the truth. Don't you want to know about the world? Well, anyway, is there a Swede out there can tell me the name of those old fish? Very old. And Mr. Anderson would take them to... I worked 2 weeks with him, you know, once when I was a kid. He was a carpenter. And he used to take them in his lunchbox. And let me tell you, and we were working all night long at 3 o'clock in the morning, that lunchbox would sit over there and moan. You could hear it moaning. And once in a while, it would go... You'd hear it bubble. Ooh. The lunchbox would... Oy, 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 oy. And it's just all by itself over in the corner. And there it is next to my poor little cream cheese and radish sandwich, you know. And then we'd sit up on the top of the scaffold. And Anderson, you never saw anything like it. You know those little black lunch boxes, the regular black ones, you know, that look like a little thing on the top with a little, you know, they got a little thermos jug on the top. That's the first lunch box I ever saw that when it opened, it went poof. That lunchbox would open like a gigantic keg of beer. And that fish, you know, everything would go. My eyeballs would itch and everything. And old Anderson would wade into it. And the stuff he kept in that little pint thermos jug really was the closest thing that I know of to the universal solvent. Anderson, I'll tell you, Anderson would take a long slug of this after the fish. And whatever it was a very, very funny smell. I don't know. Smelled like a very strange smell. It was like ether or something. If you can imagine ether with a little vanilla and perhaps just a touch of strawberries in it. He'd go,
would you like a drink?
He would say to me, a drink. He had that kind of talk. And I'm sitting there on the end, way on the end, eating my apple, you know. Oh, boy. Well, is there anyone knows the name of those fish? Sure, see, she's getting there. It's coming in, right, fish? No. The United Nations is calling. Well, I'll tell you, though, about that sauerkraut. Mrs. Anderson would go around the neighborhood with the sauerkraut petition. And the reason she would, now, as far as I'm concerned, there was no better smell on a hot spring day or a hot fall day. I think it was fall when she made it. Yeah, it was always fall, but I remember there were a lot of hot days. It was fall. On a hot fall day when Mrs. Faupel's sauerkraut had been fermenting for about a week and a half, and little flags were beginning to fly on this thing, you know, and once in a while the crock would go bloop like that, and you'd see that kraut stone go about a foot and a half in the air and come bouncing down. The sun is on it, and this big old crock would just belch right into the air, bloop, like that. Whoo, boy, everybody, you know, their hair would curl for blocks around. And it was a wild, great, unbelievably, to me, it was a very exciting odor. And then about every third or fourth, it was the only thing that made Heine Faupel actually viable in the neighborhood. It was the only thing that kept Faupel in the crowd, because Faupel had a round head and he had the fuzz on the top. And he rode this Irish mail. So Faupel was really an outsider. But the kids all dug the crowd. And on afternoons when no one was home, when old man Faupel and Mrs. Faupel were down at the German-American Bund or whatever it is they went, Faupel would take us on the back porch and we would dip into the sauerkraut. And the sauerkraut, it's bubbling. And little hands would come out and little claws and stuff. You know, it was swimming and you could see little things, a fin would go past and all that. And we'd go back and we'd dip our hands in this thing. Oh, boy, let me tell you. Oh, there are few delights. Few. Now, I know that you think you've lived. I mean, you've been to the Sixth Avenue Delicatessen, Eddie. You've probably been to Horn and Hard Art. A lot of you have been to Child's Restaurant. Perhaps even some of you have been to Schraft's. And you think you've lived. There is nothing, but nothing, like freshly gefilted sauerkraut, freshly fermented sauerkraut on the back porch of Mrs. Fopple's porch with the sun beating down on there. It is just incredible. It just had spoiled me for everything. You know? I'll tell you, guys who have tasted this, some guys have sworn, you know, there's a funny thing. You can have such an incredibly complete, ecstatically complete, emotional and sensational fulfillment. Now, when I say sensation, I'm talking about experience, feeling. You can have such a tremendous, almost a traumatic experience of such great delight that you swear off everything else for the rest of your life, because anything else is a come down. Do you know that I know one guy who took monastic vows after Mrs. Fopple's sauerkraut? It was just nothing else. Nothing else. Chicks, nothing. Nothing made the scene after that. He's one of the few happy guys I know. Yes, and the name of that fish is lutefisk. It's lutefisk. I know lutefisk. They used to give it to me. Lutefisk und glug. Oy, 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 what a combination. Whew. You notice how my ears stick out from my head? Put two and two together. Lutefisk glug. A whole bit. And I was just a growing boy. You know, they used to tell me that cigarettes would keep... You know, they never talk about that. Nobody's investigated that. Cigarettes keeping you from growing? Well, they used to talk about cigarettes stunting your growth. Let me tell you, one afternoon with the lutefisk and the glug, I shrunk a foot and a half just like... right there. I wasn't kidding, wasn't it? That is lutefisk, L-U-T-E, with the little umlauts and little things, little crystal balls and chandeliers over the U there. Lutefisk. Lutefisk, the way it's pronounced. And, you want to hear more about Heine Fopple's revenge? No, I don't tell you. You want to hear more about it? I don't think so. I think I'm making everybody sick out there, and I'm not trying to. Do you know? I'll tell you something about kraut stones, in case you're interested. If you know anything about a good German neighborhood, when they make kraut on the back porch, a kraut stone is a family heirloom. That many a kraut stone goes back to the Germanic Teutonic Knight period. Oh yes, oh yes. Yes, indeed. In fact, Prince Ludwig II of Bavaria, München, he had a kraut stone. It's right now, it's next to the crown jewels of Ludwig II. It's in the big castle there outside of Munich. It's true. It is the royal kraut stone that the kraut was made for the royal family of Bavaria. And it goes all the way back to roughly, they've dated it to about the year 438. And it's one of the earliest known kraut stones. Now, you see, a kraut stone is a big round stone, and it gets ripe itself. After all, you know, you spend your life, you spend 150 years floating in kraut, you get pretty ripe. Well, you should see a kraut stone, a big kraut stone, a big chunk of granite, a big round kraut stone that has been in kraut, has bubbled up and down in the kraut for like 450 years. That kraut stone is... Well, it's got a life of its own. It has its own definition. It's not stone anymore, certainly not kraut. It is something else. It is a rare and beautiful thing. It really is. And Mrs. Fopple had a famous kraut stone that was brought over in one of her forebears' knapsacks all the way from the Rhineland. And yes, it was the Rhinish Linden. And it was brought all the way over from, I believe it. She was from, if I'm not mistaken... I believe she was from the Westphalia, where they make the Westkraut. And they had this kraut stone that she had been brought over by her great-great-grandfather, and it survived through the Whiskey Rebellion. Now, the Whiskey Rebellion I'm telling you about is a whiskey rebellion that occurred in the neighborhood. That was a very different whiskey rebellion than the one you're thinking of. And every available stone was called into duty during that particular whiskey rebellion. Except, of course, this famous kraut stone, which today, as far as I know, survives in the Field Museum in Chicago. It is known as the Fopple stone. All right, cut it out. Now, gang, I don't need that now. I don't need that kind of stuff anymore. Is there any kraut stone fans calling in out there? Yeah? Well, lutefisk. Well, I can give you some little tips if you want to make your own kraut. There's nothing better than to add a couple of handfuls of bay leaves to the kraut. Yes, a lot of people don't know about that. If you add a little bay leaf to it, and also, if you would like to really have your kraut swing, as Mrs. Fopple used to say, I don't actually know now the lower German word for swing, schwingsch, I believe it was. something like that. But you add to, I tell you what you can add, a little pinch, not a pinch really, just about, cup your hand a little bit, see, and you put about, a little itsy bitsy layer, maybe about 8 or 9 cloves of clove. Just throw it in there. Oy, 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 oy. Oh, yeah, right? And how? And what really makes a kraut sing, if you're going to make yourself a jug of kraut, what really makes a kraut sing, if you use some raw sugar in it. Oh, oy, oy, oy. Oh, yes. Oh, now, even now, it's like, I cannot go on. I just can't go on. We're going to have to change the subject. It's getting completely away. Because, you see, when you get this close to true ecstatic experiences, you get a lot of embarrassed people. There's going to be ladies writing in that the women and children are listening, and, you know, they can't experience this kind of thing. You want to hear how else you can make your kraut go? I'll tell you one little trick, too, that helps the kraut out now, if you really are kraut fans. About a half a handful of dried California raisins. Throw them in the kraut. Oh. I could tell you kraut dishes. Have you ever had baked kraut pie? No, it's not a pie. Now we think of pie as a dessert in this country. But baked kraut pie with crumbs as a main vegetable with cold roast pork. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Cold roast pork. Now, you want me to tell you how to fix the real, how do you really fix pork? Listen, if any of you are, all right, let's level here now. If any of you are going to make, now, I don't want to get on the recipe bit again now. No, that's terrible. You get a tiger by the tail, and the next thing you know, I'll be on in the afternoon with Alfred McCann and you know, the whole business. And I just can't, asparagus is, I'll tell you what you do. Now, listen carefully to Daddy here. Now, if you're going to make yourself, and there are very few more succulent dishes in this world, Ed, than a good roast loin of pork. And don't underdo it. And do it slowly. You know where it says in there 2 hours? Do it 2.5 or maybe 3 hours. And just a little lower temperature than they say. The slower you do roast pork, the better it is. And that, in fact, is good for all roast meat. Generally, roast chickens, too. You take this roast pork, and you stick it. Now, I'm not going to get into this. You take this roast pork and put it in a big roasting pan. Got it, Ed? And when you put this thing in, you put a little butter on the top of it, salt and pepper, and you start it. Now, you got the scene. You start it. Now, I would suggest that on the top of the roast pork, if you really want to make a little, ready to make, when it's really ready to make the scene, it's getting brown and it's sissing and sizzling, and the sauerkraut juice is making people call the police for blocks around. You know, it's really going. When it's, oh, yes, it'll do that. You take the sauerkraut. Don't just use sauerkraut juice. You got a can of sauerkraut. I mean, I'm sorry you can't get the fresh stuff. I mean, we have to admit, you live in D'Agostino, so you're getting a can. All right. I mean, that's better than nothing. But you use the juice, and then just before you serve it, you take about 2 handfuls of that sauerkraut and just dribble it all over it. Sauerkraut all over the thing. Shh, just spread it out, and that sauerkraut gets brown. Oh, boy. And then, just before you take it out, sprinkle a few little breadcrumbs over that thing, and then you lay that. And I'll tell you, if you would like to really make this thing go, take little apples, wine sap apples, the little red apples, you see, and you cut them into quarters. And about a half an hour before you're taking this thing out of the oven, drop the apples all around the bottom of the pan in the sauerkraut juice. Oh, well, all right. This is getting ridiculous. Now, see, it's just getting silly. I can. Yeah, you see, now, you get on this thing and everybody gets nostalgic and angry. They really do. Do you want to hear what Faupel finally did? All right. No, I better not tell you what Heinie Faupel did. Heinie Faupel's revenge? Well, Heinie Faupel, I think that's one of the greatest names I've ever known. That's a great kid name, Heinie Faupel. Well, Heinie Faupel was had this haircut, you see. Oh, I can't tell you what Heinie did. No, I don't want to give kids ideas, and I don't want to tell you. It's not the mischievous kid, but Heinie Faupel had a revenge, which is still talked about in that neighborhood. Now, I'll have to tell you where that neighborhood was. This was not Indiana. This neighborhood, in case any of you are really interested, was in the north side of Chicago, which was where I originally festered. I was not born in Indiana. I was born in Chicago. And this was in the very close vicinity of Lincoln and Belmont. If any of you Chicago types are listening, this is in the heart of the Heine Foppel district, matter of fact. And about within sneaking distance, about X blocks away, was the Curtis Candy Factory, where they made Baby Ruth candy bars and Butterfingers. And Heine Foppel's dreaded, unbelievably inhuman, diabolically creative revenge was connected with the Curtis Candy Company and Baby Ruth candy bars and the Butterfinger syndrome. You want to hear about Heine Foppel's revenge? I'll tell you what Heine Foppel did. Rotten Retfink. Heine Foppel was bugged. He was. There is always a kid in every neighborhood who doesn't make it with any of the other kids for whatever reason. It has nothing to do with Heine Foppel being German. It just had to do with Heine Foppel. There was something about Heine Foppel and that bowling ball head and the Heine Foppel look, the whole bit. The kids didn't think, you know, he was a Foppel with the Irish male. Well, one fantastic day, Heine Foppel's grandfather worked at the Curtis Candy place. And Heine Foppel's grandfather had a gigantic white handlebar mustache. He was a real German. And he worked at the candy place. And one day, old Grandpa Foppel arrived at Heine Foppel's place with about 3,500 pounds of rejected Baby Ruth candy bars and rejected Butterfinger bars and rejected bars of all assorted sizes, shapes, and various consistencies. Now, these candy bars were rejected for... Well, I'll tell you. You know what? Why they rejected them? Because they were too big. The machine made them too big. It wasn't because there was a mouse in them. The machine made them too big. Or one end wasn't covered with chocolate and the other end was. And Foppel sat on the front porch for 8 solid weeks and ate Baby Ruth candy bars. He ate Butterfinger candy bars. And that crummy little rotten bowling ball head, his hair grew longer and longer, Foppel grew bigger and bigger and bigger, the sauerkraut grew riper and riper, and not one time did that little son of a gun, not once did he look across and say, I want a Baby Ruth bar, you want a candy, nothing, Heine Foppel's revenge.